Just this month, the court handed down a ruling in favor of American Samoan plaintiffs living in Utah who mounted a legal challenge, saying they were being treated like second-class citizens without U.S. citizenship. The decision is expected to be appealed. But to get reaction to this latest twist, we talked to Lina Cruze, author of a book entitled The Pacific Insular Case of American Land Rights and Law in Unincorporated U.S. Territories. She says it's important to remember those territories came to have a political relationship with the United States through different paths. She unpacks what she believes is at stake.
American Samoa is different in its pathway to its absorption into the U.S. sphere, whereas they, American Samoa, signed two deeds of cessions, which are treaties, in 1900 and 1904. And it's a mutual agreement. It's allegiance. We give loyalty and allegiance to America, and America will protect its customary traditions and its lands. And it's also enshrined in our Constitution, our revised Constitution of American Samoa. So since 1900, it's been absorbed, and it doesn't have a congressional act. There has, from 1900 to December 2019, there has never been a plebiscite in American Samoa where the citizenry, the residents of American Samoa, have ever asked to vote on this citizenship issue. There's never been one. Puerto Rico, there's been four. I think fifth is the latest one as of last year, I think. And their populace, their residents, want citizenship. So this issue of foreign courts 5,000 miles away deciding judicial fiat that they are going to determine these rights upon American Samoa and apply the entire Constitution, it could be risky for American Samoans. And I know there's a lot of conversations that are happening right now, because, you know, Hawaii, just like American Samoa, we are very proud of our sons and daughters and our commitment to all of the branches of the military. Hawaii has a very high enlistment rate. So per capita in American Samoa, we have the highest recruitment enlistment for America per capita. And so there's this argument that's being had, well, why don't American Samoans want citizenship? You know, they're so patriotic, and we're patriotic here in Hawaii, all of our veterans. We fight for these rights, and these rights of everyone feels Americanness equals citizenship. And there's a pause, and everyone kind of can't understand, well, why don't they get it, and why don't they want it? So this is now where everyone kind of gets hazy on, well, how does culture, how does this apply to a citizenship? Like, what's the connection? And there are two distinct connections. When we say in the Constitution of American Samoa that it protects our two pillars, our customary lands, which are ancestral lands held by the family that have stewardship under the authority of our chiefs, which are called Matai. That's one pillar. Then the second pillar, our lands, there is no such thing as fee simple in American Samoa. They're customary, held by families. And so there's no surveys. We don't have meets and bounds and surveys, right? So they're just lands that we have held by the families. So what the plaintiffs are saying in this recent suit in Fitisamanu in Utah versus the United States, the three plaintiffs, they're saying that they were born in American Samoa. They reside in Utah for over 20 years, and they want birthright citizenship. So here's the scenario. They live in Utah, right? They don't live on ancestral land. So the fear by the 62,000 people, the risk is when you live on customary lands and you don't have surveys, right? So with this judge's decision, everyone in American Samoa by birth can become, are, according to him, birthright citizens. That means everyone. Not just American Samoans, that means our foreign-born nationals. So that means Filipinos, Fijians, Tongans, and U.S. citizens are already living there for ages. So once everyone becomes U.S. citizens, think about it, Catherine. If everyone becomes citizens, is it not a far stretch for someone to look around and say, wait a minute, I own a business, I have two sewing shops, and I have a repair automotive shop. My children go to school, I pay taxes, I also vote. Do you not think it would be a far-fetched for someone to look around and say, why can't I own the land that my business is on if we're all citizens? That makes no sense to me, per the Constitution, right? And then the second argument would be, Catherine, currently right now our political system is enmeshed with culture and the American Republican system. So in our legislature, which we call the FONO, the House of Representatives is a popular vote. We go out and we poll and we vote A. But the Senate, they are composed of only chiefs that are appointed by our county council of chiefs. So if you were living there and we all became U.S. citizens, don't you think one day if you are active, you volunteer on the PTA, right? You clean litter, you're environmentally a steward, and you look around, you think, wait, I think we can do more in my village. I want to run to be a senator. But what if you're not American Samoan? If we're all citizens, don't you think someone would look at our Constitution and say, wait a minute, if we're all U.S. citizens, how can you forbid me from being in the Senate because of my race? I can foresee, and the risk would be people would think there are potential other federal lawsuits where people won't like what's happening in American Samoa and then run to federal courts and sue. And that's the fear and the risk that everyone believes, because what the mainstream media isn't picking up on is all of the American Samoans that live in the States, like the ones in Utah, they absolutely have a pathway to citizenship. In fact, they have an easier pathway than other non-citizen nationals. They reside in the States for a consecutive 3 months and they pay a fee, which right now it's about $500. But they want it birthright citizenship. They don't want to go through the naturalization process that is available to them.
And the land issue and the cultural issue is so important.
It's very important because right now there are a lot of engaged, wonderful, loving people that are not American Samoans that live in American Samoa. But what the risk is that all of these very loving people, right, that live there, they may one day want to own the land that they live on or that they have worked so hard, that they pay taxes on, that they have businesses on. And that's the fear, is people in American Samoa, if you want citizenship, they reside in a state. It's available to them. But if the people that reside in Utah, they don't want to go through the naturalization process and they want it birthright, they force this birthright citizenship upon American Samoans that live in American Samoa. And they want it done not through the legislative process, they want it done through the judicial process, where one man determines citizenship for 62,000 people in American Samoa. How can you say that you want to embrace American principles but not want American Samoans to make their own self-determination pathway to vote for themselves what they want? To allow American Samoans the pathway that Puerto Rico has done, where the local populace have voted for themselves what timing, how they want to go about citizenship, the process, and for dialogue. No, what these people want is to force it in the courts and not let it happen through our electoral process that is going on right now in American Samoa.
Is there a phrase in Samoa that captures kind of the spirit of what's at stake here?
In the Constitution, we say God is first. And in meaning this, I also think in the court case in Fitisamanu, this one right now, if you look at all the evidence, they point to an era in time in the 1920s and 1930s. And this is what Judge Wadup spent pages talking about. He said in the 1920s and 1930s, Samoan chiefs, they asked in a commission that they wanted U.S. citizenship. And they're absolutely right. There is that time during the 1920s and 1930s that they wanted citizenship. But it is during an era where territories throughout the world and, well, throughout Oceania wanted more self-determination. This is when the independent state of Samoa, they just had this horrific experience happen there where a pandemic came in, influenza, when Western Samoa was under New Zealand and 20% of the populace died. And they made a really bad decision and they didn't quarantine this boat, the Tulane. And when the boat arrived, it killed a lot of people. And so because of this situation and political movements towards stronger self-determination, chiefs in American Samoa at the time, they sought out more self-determination and they wanted a closer arrangement with the United States. So they asked for it early on. But what the plaintiffs in this Fitzsimonu case didn't show, after a couple of years, they actually wanted no citizenship. It came out that they didn't want it because primarily of customary lands.
Because the land issue.
Yes, yeah. Because of the land issue. Because in our Constitution right now, the only persons that can own land in terms of customary land, right, family lands, are persons of American Samoan ancestry. And it's 50%. It's laid out 50% American Samoan ancestry. So if you think about it in that way, say you live on family lands. Say you move back home and you're all American Samoans and you live on family land, right? And you're all living by each other. All of your kids go to school. You're all working. You have your parents, everyone's, right, grandparents and voted, and you're married and all your in-laws live on family land. That's how it works. So when something happens, an event or a special ceremony, the Maatai will come together and say, okay, this is what we're going to do as a steward over us. And then we all give and we distribute resources under our Maatai. Now, what I'm saying in my book and what the fear is, if all of you live on family land that's owned by the family, but then by this decision, everyone becomes U.S. citizens, what if the family's next to you, right, are U.S. citizens, are Tongan nationals, Fijian nationals, and all of us become citizens at the same time? Do you not think it would be far-fetched for all of them who, like your family, all work, all send their kids to school, all pay taxes, for them to say one day, wait a minute, why do you all get to own your lands and I can never own, even though I pay and I contribute, I love America, we're all equally citizens. This idea of equalness and Americanness, it cuts both ways. If everyone wants to be equal and apply it, and in the plaintiff's view, they say they just want parts of the Constitution. You can be a U.S. citizen, but you can still hold on to your lands. Not all the Constitution will be applied. I think that's a very heavy risk that you take on.
Right. It's kind of like a la carte. They want it a la carte.
Yes. Right? You want to slice the Constitution. And the reason why American Samoans can do that now is because of this political arrangement. They're unorganized and it's unincorporated and they're non-citizen nationals, meaning throughout 100 odd years, from 1900 till now, the insular cases of the Supreme Court has settled on this issue that only fundamental rights apply. And so citizenship, voting for the president, and in the territories, you know, Catherine, we don't have electors. This is all part of that scenario, where these are the things we don't have because we are not citizens. And people like to really focus on those issues, say, oh, you're second class citizens. Oh, you don't have the full rights. I think it's misdirected because the perspective is from an outsider. You see that not having that, then you're without. But from an American Samoan perspective, the view could be, we are without that, but we hold on to our culture and our traditions. We still have our chiefs. We still have our customary lands. And so someone may say, well, you don't know that it's going to be taken away. And this is what we're talking about earlier, right, Catherine? Oh, yes, we do. Just look at what's happened in Guam. Just look at what's happened here, right here in Hawaii. As soon as you start to want to apply the Constitution and everyone becomes equal, because that's the American way, I don't think it's a far-fetched then for people then to argue, once people become citizens and want this equalness, you can't tell people, well, you're only equal in citizenship, but not equal in land ownership.
So how does this work with tribal lands and, let's say, Native Americans?
With the Native Indians, that's actually an argument that the judge in Utah had made. He tried to make a parallel argument, if you read his decision, that American Samoa, let's look at what citizenship is. So the judge goes through this process. He used his first example in England. He said under King Henry, right, when Scotland came under England, all of them became subjects, right, citizens under that kingdom. And then he jumped from there to Native Indians. Then from there, freed black slaves. And then he makes these arguments that subpopulations underneath the flag receive full protections of the Constitution's, its privileges and its rights. So he makes this argument. The Native Americans are not without the United States, because in the citizenship clause, it says everything within the United States is part of, right? So he makes this kind of counter argument that, well, American Samoa is not without the United States, so ergo it's within, and that's how he applied birthright citizenship.
So can you apply the whole concept of, you know, reservations then with protecting land for the Samoans in American Samoa and protecting those tribal lands?
Well, and see, that's the distinction, and people also like to make parallel also with Guam. Is that in Guam, right, and CNMI, they have protections for their ancestral lands. But the difference, though, is American Samoa is unincorporated and unorganized and non-citizen nationals by birth. So there are political and legal distinctions. And because Native Indians and their lands, tribal lands in America, they have never come under the insular cases of over 100 years. So
that's the distinction.
That's the distinction politically and legally. So every year there is a new law. If there is a new law in the Supreme Court, it may only apply to, say, Guam, but it doesn't necessarily apply to American Samoa. Every year there's what my old professor, he's a professor of law here at University of Hawaii at Manoa, Dr. Van Dyke, he calls it the indiscernible matrix of laws. You don't know what's happening at any given year because the laws are distinct for each territory. So each territory has to know which laws apply to it. And that's the distinction between American Samoa, the other territories, and Native Indians, is we come under a plethora of different Supreme Court laws that applies only to American Samoa.
That was Lene Kruse talking about the possible implications of a recent ruling handed down in a legal challenge by American Samoan residents living in Utah over birthright citizenship. She's written a book called The Pacific Insular Case of American Samoa Land Rights and Law in Unincorporated U.S. Territories. For links, head to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.